Good evening, Michael. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you, Andrew. Nice to be here.
Global oscillations in the Sun, what causes them?
Well, the outer part of the Sun is boiling away, so-called convection zone, and this generates sound waves, a bit like behind a jet engine, and these sound waves then bounce around inside the interior of the Sun, and the Sun effectively acts like a giant musical instrument. If those waves have the right frequencies and wavelengths, then they form so-called resonant modes, like the inside of a musical instrument, and these are the waves that we then observe.
So you're telling me that the Sun, which is what, about 1.5 million kilometres across, has sound waves going right through it?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. So how do you detect these oscillations? Obviously, you can't put a probe into the Sun, much as you'd like to. How's it done?
Okay, well, sound waves aren't going to propagate through space because space essentially is a vacuum. So you can imagine this as being like having a loudspeaker from your hi-fi inside a vacuum jar. You can't hear the waves, but if you looked very closely, you'd be able to see the vibrations of the loudspeaker. And so we do something a bit similar. We observe very closely the surface of the Sun, and we see the surface moving, and that movement is caused by these sound waves. And so we then analyse the motions of that carefully, both at different points on the surface of the Sun and also by taking continuous observations over a long period of time. And from that we can work out the frequencies at which the Sun is oscillating.
And you use mainly the SOHO spacecraft?
Yeah, the SOHO spacecraft, which was launched in 1996, is a major source of data for us. SOHO was launched with 12 instruments on board, and three of those are doing oscillation observations. So the three instruments are called MDI, Golf, and Virgo. And I have used data from all three, but the main one that I use is MDI, the Michelson Doppler Imager, because that makes high spatial resolution observations of the whole of the solar disk.
Can you run us through quickly how that imager works?
Well, basically what we're doing is we are looking at Doppler shifts of a certain line in the solar atmosphere. So this line is an absorption line, and so a dark line in the solar spectrum. And because the surface is moving, that line will move backwards and forwards to longer or shorter wavelengths. And effectively what we do is we look on either side of the absorption line, and so as it moves backwards and forwards, we will see differences in the intensity to either side of the line, and by combining those observations, we then work out what the Doppler velocity shift is.
So essentially, the wavelength of the line, spectral line you're looking at, changes in much the same way that a sound wave does for, say, an approaching racing car.
That's exactly right, Andrew. Yes.
So what has the helioseismology, you call it, from SOHO, told you about the solar interior?
Well, we've learnt a lot of things. The first quantity that the sound waves depend on is the so-called adiabatic sound speed, and that depends on how the temperature changes as you move to different positions inside the Sun, and how the mean molecular weight varies, and the mean molecular weight depends on what the chemical composition is. And so what we have done is we have measured how the sound speed varies as you go from the surface right the way into the core of the Sun, the centre of the Sun. And so one of the things that we've discovered from that is how deep this convection zone that I mentioned earlier is, and we find that it's deeper than we had thought before helioseismology. It's about 200,000 kilometres deep, where the total radius of the Sun is about 700,000 kilometres, so it goes 2/7 of the way into the centre of the Sun. And that's important because that outer layer, the convection zone, is completely mixed by the motions of the gas, and so we know that therefore will be essentially chemically the same all the way through. But then beneath that, we have different chemical gradients. We've measured the helium abundance inside that convection zone by looking at its effect on the sound speed. Paradoxically, although helium is called helium because it was discovered in the solar spectrum, it's actually very difficult to measure its abundance accurately from spectroscopic measurements. And so helioseismology has given us a completely new handle on that. And one of the interesting things we've discovered there is that about 25% of the solar composition by mass is helium, and most of the rest of it is hydrogen. Whereas, in fact, our models, if we were to make a model that will correctly predict the current luminosity and radius of the sun, evolving it in a computer model from when the sun first formed, requires a helium abundance of 28%, not 25%. And we understand that difference as being now that the helium and the heavier elements that exist in the sun actually settle over the lifetime of the sun from the convection zone into the radiative interior beneath. So that's been a very interesting confirmation of some of the theories that had predicted that settling.
What don't we know yet about the interior of the sun? What are you sort of hoping you'd be able to find out soon?
Okay, well, there are a couple of things that really interest me and motivate what I'm currently doing. One is to do with the solar dynamo. Now, the solar dynamo is the mechanism by which the sun generates its magnetic field. The sun has a magnetic field. We see that popping up through the solar surface in the form of sunspots, those have a roughly 11-year cycle, and we believe that cycle is caused by this solar dynamo. One of the things that we have discovered is that the inside of the sun is rotating as we see at the surface, but its variation with depth is something that we hadn't understood until helioseismology came along. And what we found out is that there is a rather abrupt change in the rotation, the so-called shear layer, at the base of the convection zone. And that shear layer, which we call the tachocline, we think is where the dynamo is taking place. But that is still somewhat needing to be tested. We also don't know at all really what the structure of sunspots are beneath the surface, and we don't know the connection between the sunspots when they appear at the surface and the tachocline where we think the field is being generated. Another different problem that is very interesting is that some recent work by a scientist called Martin Asplund has changed quite dramatically what we believe to be the abundances at the surface of quite common elements in the sun, oxygen and carbon. And that has, if we incorporate those new abundances into our models, that changes in a way that's quite significant for helioseismology the sound speed at the base of the convection zone. And what we find is that with the new abundances from Asplund, our models don't agree as well with helioseismic observations as the old models did. So that's quite a paradox, really. So that's something that we're still currently working on. It could be, of course, that the abundances at the base of the convection zone are different from from those that we see at the surface, but we don't believe that to be the case because of this mixing that I talked about. It's possible that some other elements that are less well constrained by surface observations might make up the deficiency and bring the models and helioseismology back into agreement. For example, neon could be the culprit.
Perhaps a related question: what are the limitations of helioseismology at the moment?
A fundamental limitation is the wavelength of the waves. So you cannot really resolve things to better than the wavelength of the waves in that particular part of the sun. But that's still pretty good. We can get down to resolutions that are something like 1/20th of the radius of the sun. So that's still quite remarkable. We would certainly like to have higher resolution observations at the surface, and we're looking forward to the launch of a satellite called the Solar Dynamics Observatory, which will be put into space by NASA next year. And that will increase by a factor of 4 the resolution that we'll get at the surface.
I suppose you're looking forward to that then.
Certainly am.
Okay. Is there any link between the motion deep inside the sun and the activity on the surface?
Well, the motions of the fluid gas inside the sun generate the magnetic field, and we think that two forms of motion are particularly important, possibly even three. One is the rotation. I've already referred to the shear. So that differential rotation can take a field which looks a bit like the field around a bar magnet or around the Earth that we call a poloidal field, and it can twist the field lines to turn them so they run around, as it were, parallel to the equator. To form so-called toroidal field. To make a dynamo, you have to then close the cycle by somehow turning toroidal field back into poloidal field. And one possible mechanism for that is so-called cyclonic motions, which can twist the toroidal field and turn it back into poloidal field. So both of those motions are important. Another possible important motion is meridional circulation. That's a flow that we see near the surface of the sun, which goes from the equatorial regions and goes up towards the poles of the sun. It's possible that flow also is important for the solar activity, the magnetic activity, because it is capable of transporting the magnetic field that's left over from old sunspots, takes it up to the pole, and then it can the flow has to close by subducting down into some depth, and then eventually coming down towards the equator again. And if that flow, which we have not yet been able to measure at depth, were to take old magnetic flux all the way down to the base of the convection zone into the tachocline, then that may help seed the next cycle of the dynamo.
Now, you've partly covered this question already, but what are the challenges now facing helioseismology?
Well, we're having a meeting this week in Monash University and talking about some of the challenges that we face, and certainly one of them is understanding in sufficient detail what effect magnetic fields have directly on these on these waves that we're using, and I think that's one of the big issues. What we're trying to do at the moment is use observations of the waves, as I mentioned, for understanding, for example, the structure underneath sunspots. We're trying to make measurements of the wave motions really quite close to the sunspots, and there the effect of the magnetic field is very strong. And at the moment, our data analysis techniques don't really take that properly into account, and so there's a challenge to us there to develop our theories. There's also a challenge observationally to to make observational tests to see if the theories are correct or not. I guess the observation, there are other observational challenges which are to get ever higher resolution, and as I mentioned, one of the ways in which we're going to do that is through the new SDO satellite, Solar Dynamics Observatory.
Well, we look forward to hearing further results. Thanks for joining us on the Space Show, Michael.
Thank you, Andrew.